The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. Salute a Veteran Every Day is underwritten by RBR Physical Therapy. Are you in pain or in discomfort? Start your journey of relief at RBR Physical Therapy, located at 1300 Corporation Parkway, Suite B in Raleigh. Call 919-917-7729. For information, visit www.rbrpt.com. Limp in, leap out. And we continue from last month's reading, where Ernie Callender had come through his career to the point where he was sent to college by the Air Force, came back to the United States Thunderbirds as a second lieutenant.
Well, good morning, Frank. I completed the training and then went back to the Thunderbirds, only for the period of signing out. I then went across the base and signed in as a brand new second lieutenant, as you used to call me, a peanut butter barb, and started my next chapter of my career as a personnel officer.
And last week when we ended, I didn't want to leave the audience hanging, so I was a bit of a spoiler and told them that you went on to become a brigadier general. So this was your first step. The Air Force recognized your potential, first of all, to send you off to school and get your degree and become an officer. And now the second half of your career really takes off and you end up being a brigadier general. So you started off as an officer in personnel and take it from there.
I was at Nellis at Las Vegas trying to learn how to spell personnel.
Mm-hmm.
And very fortunate for me, I was found by a professional and very teaching group of people, those above me and those that served alongside of me, to teach this brand new second lieutenant, first of all, what personnel was all about and what the job entailed. And the people above me taught me things in the officership side of it. You don't learn that in a 90-day school.
Right.
So I was very fortunate and very blessed that I had folks that taught me and held my hand as I learned my new stripes as an officer in the United States Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And as we got ready to leave Nellis, there is one thing. I was sent on to some advanced training called the Squadron Officer School. Do you remember Squadron Officer School, Frank?
I do indeed. I feel like you're setting me up. Ernie and I drove there together, and
yeah.
You take it from there.
One of my teachers in officership was a senior first lieutenant at the time, a guy by the name of Frank Urban. So you learn not only from your superiors and your subordinates, but you also learn a lot from your peers as well. Well, that tour went pretty quick. We came back from Squadron Officer School and finished up my tour as a young personnel officer there at Nellis. And from there, I went to the Air Force Manpower and Personnel Center as a staff officer.
Mm-hmm. What rank are you?
I was a captain select by that time.
Mm-hmm.
Just had been commissioned just under 4 years. I would be promoted to captain shortly after arriving at that time was part of the Pentagon. It was part of the Air Staff. And I worked in assignment policy.
Mm-hmm.
In that particular job, I had a little division called quality control. And it would be to make a recommendation on a staff level decision for folks that were involved with different incidences and what the Air Force from an assignment policy would do.
That was a big job for someone as junior in rank as you. And I'll tell the audience that that was the beginning of the fast track for Ernie Callender.
it was unusual for an individual with that level of experience, but someone saw some potential in that. We had worked back in Nellis a couple of fairly big projects. They had a thing called Air Force Recruiters Assistance. That is where they wanted the local bases to join in concert with the local recruiters in as much as developing programs for tours of potential enlistees into the Air Force. If I remember correctly, the Company Great Officers Association, we did some tours and so forth like that of prospective recruits into the Air Force and did some speaking engagements. We wound up being the Air Force Recruiters Assistance Base of the Year. You had a hand in that, Frank, and maybe you remember that.
I barely remember that.
You barely remember that.
I don't remember much of my hand in it, to tell you the truth.
Well, I remember bringing some future enlistees over to your detachment there at Nellis, and you gave us a tour of your facility, and you explained to us what life was like to be a young company grade officer in the Air Force. And a period of time later, we got a little note from one of the individuals that went on to the Air Force Academy, and they credited having the opportunity to walk in the shoes, so to speak, of a company grade officer or a young officer in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the program was designed about. So someone saw a little bit of potential, and I went on to the job back at sunny San Antonio, Texas,
mm-hmm.
at the, what is known for short, AFMPC.
Or Air Force Military Personnel Center.
From there, looking around after I finished that tour, it was time for me to expand my wings, and I went on my first joint tour. That is an assignment where you're working with the other services out in DOD. And I went to a military entrance processing station, and that's a joint tour where you're serving with the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, and the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
The unit that I went to happened to be in Boise, Idaho. That's where I got a dose of what the civilian community in partnership with the recruiting services and the enlistment services. At the MEPS, as it's known, and the veterans out there may know it as an AFES, an Armed Forces Entrance Examination Station.
Mm-hmm.
They changed the name to MEPS, and so I was off to conquer the world of recruiting. We didn't do the recruiting. The recruiters walked in the door with the applicants, and we did a mental and a physical and an educational evaluation of the troops or the potential troops.
Mm-hmm.
After they were found qualified, they then went into their respective services. From the MEPS, I was selected to do a special duty assignment, and I became a assistant professor of aerospace studies at an ROTC unit. I went to Central Washington University as a member of the faculty, and the ROTC detachment there, and we taught and educated young cadets to become officers in the United States Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for 3 years, and after that, the Air Force selected me to go to a intermediate school, Air Command and Staff College. I was a major at this time.
Moving on up.
Upon graduating from Air Command and Staff College, I went to the other side of the city, to Randolph Air Force Base, Texas. While I was in Air Command and Staff College, I was selected for the grade of Lieutenant Colonel, and I was the Director of Personnel for Randolph Air Force Base. And as they say, sometimes you can't keep a job, and after a couple of years of being the director of personnel responsible for military civilian personnel, education, and PME, I was tapped on the shoulder to be the deputy base commander.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of like being the deputy city manager
mm-hmm.
for Randolph Air Force Base, a very large base with a lot of different headquarters.
Yeah, a lot of stuff at Randolph.
After a couple of years as the deputy base commander, I went to one of those headquarters that was there at Randolph Air Force Base, Texas, and I became a staff officer, and I worked in the kind of the policy branch there for Air Training Command, later to be renamed Air Education and Training Program.
Yes.
I was giving a briefing to the commander of Air Training Command one day on some changes in the performance reports for officers in the Air Force. And after the briefing was over, the chief of staff called me in and he says, "Hey, the boss wants to see you." And so I went back in. I thought I had answered all of his questions. And he said, "You know, I think that I want you to be the new voice for Air Education and Training Command. I want you to be our Director of Public Affairs." And so I switched from personnel to become the Director of Public Affairs for AETC and its 13 bases. I did that for a period of time.
I'd say a pattern here. You're constantly being discovered and moved up.
Either that or I can't keep a job.
That's the old joke.
So one of the old jokes. The individual that I worked as my reporting official, the deputy commander of Air Education and Training Command, he moved in the middle of my tour as the director of public affairs, and he went over to Europe. It was a period of time, and then I got a call and said, "Hey, we sure could use your energy and your experience to come over and join the staff." And so I said, "Okay." And so I joined the USAFE staff over in Germany.
U.S. Air Forces Europe, USAFE.
And I joined as the Director of Services.
Mm-hmm.
And then it transitioned into the Director of MWR, Morale, Welfare, and Recreation in Services. Those two functions joined.
Now, this was at Ramstein Air Base, Germany, right?
That is correct. And I was chugging along there, and then this director of personnel guy floated a piece of paper that said, "Colonel Callender is in his last year of eligibility to go to senior service school." And they felt that I needed to go to that senior service school. That's one of these big squares that folks need to fill. But I had only been there less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
So the Air Force chose to break my tour as the director of MWR and services and send me to a senior service school, a joint senior service school, the NATO Defense College, and Frank, that was down in Rome, Italy.
Roma.
So
what a tough assignment.
Yes, sir. Well, it was a wonderful assignment and a wonderful opportunity to serve with my colleagues from the then 19 NATO nations.
Wow.
And we learned it was a tremendous experience. Notwithstanding the academia of it, but the opportunity to serve with, get to know the NATO nations.
Mm-hmm.
After that whirlwind tour, I went back to Ramstein Air Base, Germany, as the director of MWR, Morale, Welfare, Recreation, and Services, and completed out my tour there during some very trying times and very large budget cuts. From there, I had to go on a hardship tour, Frank. I had been selected to be what is the new name for a base commander, and I went to Hickam Air Force Base in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Somebody had to do it.
As the group commander, somebody had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived on the sunny shore of Hickam in the shade of Pearl Harbor. That's now a joint base. And I served as the support group commander, which is the kind of the city manager. You have got the police department, the fire department, and the folks out in the audience will know all about that, what a base commander would do.
Yeah.
From there, I went on my second joint tour, and I went to a command called STRATCOM, Strategic Command. It is the forerunner or the successor to the headquarters SAC. And they controlled and headquartered for all of the nuclear assets that the United States had.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there, at that time I was a colonel, and I went there as the chief of staff, had a staff of, a handful of joint, flag and, senior officers and folks from all of the services, Air Force, Army, Navy, and Marine.
Mm-hmm.
The commander's billet rotates, as far as service, as does the other staff positions.
Mm-hmm.
I held chief of staff position. I did that for 2 years, after which I was tapped on the shoulder to once again go joint, and I was selected to be the deputy U.S. military representative to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or what is commonly known as the DEP MILREP, the mm-hmm. deputy military representative. I was selected for Brigadier General just as I was leaving STRATCOM, and I went over to NATO, and you're a member of the NATO committee, the military side of the military of NATO, and you work for the chief of staff of the United States, and you employ U.S. policy for the issues from a military side to the NATO committee.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a kind of like our Congress. You've got two sides of it. You've got the ambassador side of it, where you have ambassadors from each of the nations, and then you've got the military side, where you have a military representative, and you employ United States policy alongside of the allies that are members of NATO.
Mm-hmm.
After a very exciting 3 years in NATO, I returned to the United States, leaving that joint assignment, and I went to Hill Air Force Base, Utah,
mm-hmm.
Just north of Salt Lake. And the purpose of my going there, I was not so much a member of the mission at Hill, but I was heading up a new special mission, and that was the security of the 2002 Olympics. Now, when I say security, I mean the air security.
The air security.
The Olympics was coming, and so then we had an incident in the world, tragic incident of 9/11.
Yes.
And the Olympics was to follow very shortly from September to February. So in the job as responsible for the air security for the Olympics, and in addition to troop support. And this is an example of the military tapping into the experiences that they serve with their, that they provide with their staff, and providing troop support, you know, about 5,000 troops from around the United States came in to support there. Well, you have 5,000 troops knocking on the door. They have to have a place to lay their head, and they have to have some support as far as rations and so mm-hmm. forth like that. And so we were setting that all up.
And with a mission that important, that's where you want Ernie Callender. He will get the job done.
It's not done alone. You have a lot of folks, as they used to say when I was a young second lieutenant, that swan that goes across that lake looks like it's just gliding there. But down underneath that water, there's a lot of feet going really fast, and it's to keep that swan afloat. And during my military careers, and I say that plural because I feel I had several, I've always had people below me that shored me up, and you know, a lot of times I remember as a second lieutenant, I'd have a senior non-commissioned officer take and pull me aside or give me some counseling or take me to the woodshed when I needed to go to the woodshed. And that wasn't to administer the spanking, but I've always been fortunate and blessed to have folks beneath me, beside me, and above me that helped me accomplish the mission.
And well, that's very.
We ended up the Olympics with zero incidents that were significant enough to make to make the front page of the newspaper, and any injuries we had were not imposed or inflicted by any enemies of the world. And it was at Hill Air Force Base that I stepped on the other side of the line for the first time in 36 years. And I retired from the United States Air Force out of Hill Air Force Base and went on to greener pastures, back to, as many military people do, they go back to one of the places that they lived on one of their assignments, and I went back to Boise, Idaho. And as they say, that is the rest of the story. Many military personnel go back when they retire or leave the service to one of the places that they were stationed along their career. And I stepped on the other side of the line and retired after 36 years in the United States Air Force from my multiple careers.
36
And there
years.
You have it, Frank.
That is a
small snapshot of a 19-year-old stepping into the military and going on to a very exciting and productive, hopefully productive career.
Ernie, my friend, 36 years to our nation. I am standing and giving you a sharp salute for your service, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Frank, and I salute you back.
I want to jump back and ask how you came to choose Boise.
Well, living in the civilian community on a joint tour, we chose Boise a lot for the atmosphere and the welcoming of the community to the military folks.
Mm-hmm.
And we had picked up a family at this point, as many military folks do. I married my high school sweetheart, and she served along beside me for 34 of those 36 years. Boise was a good community to raise a family.
Mm-hmm.
And so we chose Boise as a place for our permanent residence.
Outstanding. Of all those assignments, I want to go back to NATO and Brussels, Belgium. You know, when you see pictures of Brussels and Belgium in general, it just looks like a fairy land, you know. Tell us a little bit about your civilian life while you were there.
Well, the assignment at NATO kept us pretty busy. We lived on the economy. I lived in a little caserne that's like a subdivision, if you will, about 15 miles from NATO headquarters. Brussels is a nation that is split in language. They have two languages there, French being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you live on the economy, and it's exciting, notwithstanding tremendous amount of history and the tremendous amount of opportunity to bring in the culture of an ally nation.
Mm-hmm.
But it is exciting and very rewarding at the same time. You find the opportunity sometimes to travel to neighboring countries to visit some of the homes of the allies that you're serving with, and you have an opportunity to see things from a different perspective. In the United States, we talk about a couple 200 years of history, and some of the artifacts and some of the buildings, and they speak of in the thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is very humbling to see and be able to experience and look through your own retina and focus on the different landscapes that you have the opportunity to bring into focus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of times trying times, but it is, at the same time, it's very exciting and very rewarding to be a representative of this great nation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Indeed. And that's why we have this program, Salute a Veteran Every Day. Ernie, thank you again for being on Salute a Veteran Every Day. You are the greatest.
Well, thank you, Frank, very much for having me. It's an honor to have served my country as a member of the Armed Forces of the United States, and it was a whirlwind tour, and I look over my shoulder, and the first thing you know, the career is gone. And I would like to thank those veterans in your audience for the time that they had serving this great nation as well.
Yes, indeed.
Frank, you behave yourself, and God bless you.
Thank you, Ernie. So how's a kid from Las Vegas decide to join the Air Force, Ernie?
Well, I was, during that time, it was I'm going to shadow our age here, Frank. It was the mid-60s and some trying times for our nation. And I wanted to take and move on and move up. And so I left sunny Las Vegas. Las Vegas was a fast-paced town, not a lot of things for young teens. I had was going to college there at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. I had bought a restaurant and was on to make a quick million there. Didn't work out quite so well. What I had done was bought myself a job.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, that recruiter, I'm sure, didn't realize who he was recruiting, but he was recruiting one of the most can-do people I know, and somebody who's a man of action, a man of integrity, a man of honesty, a man of his word, and I salute you for your 38 years, Ernie Callender, Brigadier General.
Thank you very much. That's the kindest thing you've ever said to me, Frank.
Don't get used to it. Okay, buddy. Thanks so much.
Okay, you be good. And thank you very much. I salute all of the veterans out there in your listening audience.
Thank you. My longtime friend and Air Force veteran, Brigadier General Ernie Callender, coming to us from Boise, Idaho. That wraps up our time for Salute a Veteran Every Day. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is available as a podcast on our website, www.triangleReadingService.org. Salute a Veteran Every Day is underwritten by RBR Physical Therapy. Are you in pain or discomfort? Start your journey of relief at RBR Physical Therapy, located at 1300 Corporation Parkway, Suite B, Raleigh. Call 919-917-7729. For more information, visit www.rbrpt.com. Limp in, leap out.